This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And on this week's episode, FEI four-star judge Sarah Geike joins us to tell us more about what makes a good walk. And I'll be talking to Chase Shipka, who is winner of the Fiona Barn Pursuit of Excellence Memorial Trophy. And we'll begin by learning more about the woman behind this award, Fiona Barn, as part of our American Dressage Legends series. But first, we have a few items of news for you this week. Laura Graves and Vidardis have advanced to the number 2 spot in the FEI World Dressage Rankings after a very successful showing at the 2017 World Equestrian Festival, the CHIO, in Aachen in July. This equals the highest ranking ever by a US dressage combination. Germany's Isabel Werth and Viagold remain world-ranked number 1, and Great Britain's Carl Hester and Nip Tuck are ranked 3rd. The United States Dressage Federation is pleased to announce its newest adult amateur opportunity, the USDF Regional Adult Amateur Equitation Program. Beginning in 2018, this new adult amateur equitation program will feature an adult amateur equitation regional final class held in conjunction with each of the 9 Great American USDF Regional Dressage Championships. This program is designed to recognize adult amateurs competing in equitation and to promote correct seat, position, and use of aids in dressage. The USDF Executive Director, Stefan Hensch, explained that the USDF is continually striving to promote correct riding and to provide additional opportunities for adult amateurs to be rewarded for their excellence in the saddle. For qualifying opportunities and additional requirements about the USDF Regional Adult Amateur Equitation Program, please visit the website at usdf.org/equitation. And now, in our American Dressage Legends series, we remember the life of Fiona Barn, who was inducted into the USDF Rimmer Foundation Hall of Fame in 2008. In recognition of her leadership in directing the U.S. Equestrian Team's dressage program for nearly 30 years, she served as team manager or chef d'équipe at a total of 6 Olympic, World Equestrian and Pan American Games from 1976 through to 1992. Her diplomacy and attention to detail and the personal connection she made with every rider helped guide the US's rise to international success. She served as dressage team manager for the 1976 and 1992 Olympic Games, the 1986 and 1990 World Equestrian Games, the 1989, 1990, 1991, and the 1993 Olympic Festivals, and the 1985 and 1989 North American Dressage Championships. She was the organizer of the USET Festival of Champions in 1991 and 1992. Fiona enjoyed one of her proudest moments at the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona when the US dressage team won the bronze medal after a 16-year drought in the sport. As team leader, she also led the USET to a bronze medal at the 1976 Olympics and a silver medal at the 1987 Pan American Games. At the time of her passing, USET Chairman Emeritus Bill Steinkraus said, "What the team is today is, in a way, a memorial to her." According to 6-time Olympian Robert Dover, "Fiona Barn had to deal with all of us self-absorbed, supremely focused athletes, making each of us feel like we and our horses were the most important things in her life, and to a certain degree that was true. For all these years, the USET, and especially dressage, were not a job to Fiona, but most definitely her raison d'etre. She is, and will always be, one of the greatest reasons for every bit of success I have ever achieved in my life." A master at fitting 50 hours into a 24-hour day, Fiona took on the development of the Young Riders program with the same passion that she devoted to the USET dressage team. She arranged to bring world-famous German dressage trainer Konrad Schumacher to the U.S. and turned him into a devotee for the development of U.S. advanced young riders. She spent untold hours discussing and refining the dressage selection criteria so that they strived for the highest standards while remaining fair to all young riders. Fiona always knew who the advanced young riders were. She knew them by name and by horse, and she knew their strengths and weaknesses. Always was the ever-present question, how can we help them develop to be better to bring them along? Many of the advanced young riders were never even aware of this woman's tireless work towards making their dreams come true. Perhaps it was a result of her Scottish heritage, but Fiona was a link to a certain kind of past. Her dignity, privacy, and high standards were a statement, the pursuit of excellence. She often said and felt that this summed up the Advanced Young Riders program. The pursuit of excellence is the legacy Fiona left to all advanced young riders and to everyone who ever knew or worked with her. To this end, the Fiona Barn Pursuit of Excellence Memorial Trophy was established in 1994 and has been presented to the young rider competing in North American Young Riders Championships who has received the highest combined average score in the FEI Young Rider Team, individual and freestyle tests. The trophy is on permanent display at the Rimmer Foundation USDF Hall of Fame at the USDF National Education Center at the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington. Fiona was also an accomplished AHSA and FEI judge and served on the AHSA Dressage World Cup and Dressage Committees. Fiona Barn had a remarkable career in the sport of dressage for almost three decades, leading the USCT Dressage Program and guiding and developing the Advanced Young Riders Program. And we'll hear now from this year's winner of the Fiona Barn Pursuit of Excellence Memorial Trophy, Chase Shipka. She's actually down in Wellington, Florida, continuing her training after the Young Riders. Welcome to the program, Chase.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Well, first of all, congratulations on winning the Fiona Barn Pursuit of Excellence. That was a marvelous competition for you in every sense of the word. And I want to talk about how it played out for you. But I mentioned you were in Wellington, Florida. So why don't we set the scene as to what you're doing down there and who you train with?
Absolutely. Well, I'm down in Wellington until the end of the winter. And right now I train with Oded Shimoni and Robert Dover whenever he's in town and not chefing.
Okay. Well, let's also introduce your Dutch Warmblood, 12 years old now, Zigal, and you've been doing pure dressage now for a very short time, really, but obviously with some considerable success already. So let's talk about this partnership. How you found your partner that you rode at the Young Riders?
Yes, he's incredible. And I actually took about a year and a half to find him. I vetted maybe two or three horses overseas and none of them passed. And thankfully, on our last trip over there, I found him through Judy Reynolds and she was doing small tour with him. And I tried him and it was basically, you know, love at first sight. We just connected instantly and he's the type of horse I love. He's just very forward, he listens, and he's extremely sensitive. It's just nice to have a horse that, you know, trusts me and that I can trust him completely.
It was all ready for you then to enjoy at the Young Riders. Now let's talk about that, how that competition unfolded. Going into it, Chase, and being on the team, what did that mean to you?
Well, I was thrilled that I qualified and was named to the team. Last year, I tried on a different horse and unfortunately didn't make the team. So this year, I was extremely happy to have made it. And I just sort of went in wanting to win, but not, you know, putting my expectations too high because there's a lot of, you know, fabulous riders there. And I didn't want to, you know, disappoint myself if it didn't go exactly to plan. But I definitely wanted to do well. That was the goal.
So it was probably even more sweeter to be on the team this time, having just missed the cut last year.
It was.
And so what about your preparation then with this horse? Let's talk about that and going into that competition. Did you expect him to put on the kind of performance that you did?
I really didn't, honestly. At the show, he scored above average that he usually scores. He's usually a very nervous horse and sensitive and gets a little bit stiff in the ring. And, you know, he was a bit stiff during the test sometimes, but I was actually very surprised as to how calm and how well he listened throughout all three tests, actually, in the freestyle. He was just incredible. He couldn't have been any better, actually.
Let's talk about the first ride, though, you had with him on the team. How did that go? How was your preparation? I mean, going into a big arena, it's a different atmosphere. You've got the pressure, however that looked for you, of being on the team now and to prove yourself with him. Play this out for us, how that really unfolded on the first day there, Chase.
Sure. Well, the day before, I actually got the opportunity to ride him in the ring, so he was a little bit familiarized with it. And then the day of competition, you have sort of a long walk from the stables to the ring, so I think that is definitely beneficial, so they can sort of stretch out their legs. And, you know, in warm-up, just focus on regular things. And then during the actual test, I was definitely more nervous because it's the team event. People are depending on you, not just yourself. And so I was definitely more nervous about going into that, but I just wanted to ride a clean test. It actually wasn't clean, but we scored fairly well, actually higher than I thought we would have scored. He just did, you know, incredibly well in the test and listened to what I was saying. But, you know, a few little mistakes here and there, which I wasn't too happy about. Like we missed a single change on the short side. And I had to sort of do it on the diagonal before the pirouette. So that was a mistake. But other than, you know, those few mistakes coming out of the ring, I was, you know, happy that he actually was listening to me. And, you know, it wasn't fabulous, but it was a decent test.
Well, you set the scene there with 69.92% in the team. And from that then, Chase, what did you take away that you needed to work on for the individual test, which was coming next?
From that test, I knew I needed to be a little bit smarter about certain elements, like on the diagonals, just straightness and preparing for the, you know, pirouette, and then just absolute straightness. And everything had to be a level higher because the competition was getting, you know, tougher. And just little things around the test that just needed to be cleaned up. So, you know, I watched the test maybe 10 times or so and just made a list of everything that needed to get improved before the next day, and then sat down with my coach and just discussed everything that I needed to do better and that, you know, what we did well, but just needed to bring a little bit more for the next day.
How did you psychologically deal with having been on the team and what that meant to you before you then went on as an individual?
Well, I mean, I love the team element. I think it's the most incredible thing because you're not just people are relying on you and you're just not competing for yourself. And you get to support, you know, your other teammates, and everyone is sort of depending on each other. So there's a huge element, like you're not competing against each other, you're competing with each other. And I think that's incredibly rare defined because not a lot of things are a team sport within riding, but when you get to ride on a team, it's an incredibly different element. I just love it. And I think anyone who does can say the same thing, that it's just an amazing experience to ride with other people and depend on them and they depend on you.
Absolutely. It is a very different experience altogether, but there's also a great deal of fun, isn't there, that comes with it.
Absolutely.
Being part of the team and the decking out the golf cart and all of that. You must have enjoyed that just as much as being an individual and going forward as an individual.
Yeah, competing as an individual is also a very special experience. But I mean, just for me personally, I love competing with a team, but competing as an individual, you know, there's a lot more stress, I think, on yourself, just because you're competing against a lot more people and you just want to do well for yourself personally. But, you know, the team, I think, also has a lot of stress, and because you're not just relying on yourself, but you're relying on other people as well. So it's two different things. But for me, I think competing on a team, I like a little bit better.
So let's go forward then now to the individual test and then your freestyle, because it just got better and better. And obviously he really settled down into the job during the week. Let's talk about those next tests and how they played out.
For sure. Well, the individual also, it went extremely well and better than the first day. I didn't have as many mistakes. And just preparation-wise, you know, I just watched the video over and over and just knew what I had to do. And there was a certain level of competition that, you know, we had to meet, and that you knew when you had to get a certain percentage in order to do well. So that's a whole nother element. And then I was thrilled with the individual test. He was also incredible, just listening to everything I was saying. And just going on forward to the freestyle, I was definitely the most nervous about that because my horse Ziggy is actually his barn name. It's extremely sound sensitive. So, you know, any tiny little sound, he'll immediately perk up and, you know, look at. So my freestyle music has to be very soft and not extremely loud and powerful, but it's just more quiet and subdued, which I think he loves and definitely benefits from the quieter music.
Tell us about your choice of music.
Well, it's mostly classical. The beats are extremely subdued. They're not very loud, but everything is choreographed perfectly to him. And I worked with my choreographer, Marlene Whitaker, and she and I sat down at the beginning of the season and just talked about what the horse needs and what kind of music that would best suit him and also suit me. And it's, you know, very quiet.
Well, just to remind everybody that your individual test scored a 71.52 and your freestyle then a 74.65. So that just got, as I said, better and better. And that must have been very satisfying to get that kind of score. How does it compare with previous competitions with him, Chase?
Well, the freestyle was our highest score to date anywhere. It's actually the highest score I think I've ever gotten in any competition, dressage-wise. So I was, you know, extremely happy. I didn't actually think I did that well because I never want to put, you know, a lot of pressure on it. But someone came up and told me, and I actually started crying. I didn't think he did that well, and I didn't know that we had won, but I was still, you know, unbelievably emotional as to how it went and just how I was so, like, fortunate that I was sitting on him. And he's just the most amazing thing in my life, really.
Well, you went from silver medal in the team and in the individual test to winning the gold of the freestyle test. And then that culminated in winning the Pursuit of Excellence Award, that the Memorial Trophy of the Fiona Barn. That must be extra special. Let's talk a little bit about that because, you know, when you've competed it as well as you have done, to have this kind of recognition on top of it all is just an amazing bonus to any competitor. Talk about how that felt when you realized that you had been awarded this.
Oh, I honestly didn't expect it at all. I didn't think my scores averaged, you know, the highest in the competition. But when they announced it, I just was, you know, completely shocked. And, you know, it just made me even more thankful, you know, to be at Young Riders and to be experiencing all these things for my first year competing there. And, you know, I'm just, it was an amazing, amazing surprise.
Well, it certainly was an amazing competition all round for you. What were your biggest takeaways then, Chase?
I definitely most enjoyed the Young Rider environment. I think it's, you know, an amazing thing for anyone to be at Young Riders and to see all the top people in the sport competing against each other. So that's an incredible thing to experience, and I would, you know, highly recommend anyone that experience, and that they should do everything they can to try to experience it because it's, you know, amazing. And just my takeaway from the whole weekend is you just need to keep trying harder and harder each day. It doesn't end. There's not just one individual test. You just have to keep going throughout the days and, you know, improve upon the day before and just never to give up, really, and just to watch your rounds over and over again and list out every single thing that was good and bad and that what you can improve on. And yeah, you know, just being on a team is just, you know, an incredible thing. I think it's sad that it's my last year and it was really my only year competing at Young Riders, but I'm just happy that I was able to do it.
Well, finally, then, I'm sure there are a lot of people that made this possible for you and you'd like to give them a mention, starting with your parents, of course, who have supported you through this. Do give anybody a shout out that you would like to who was part of this effort.
Of course. Well, firstly, my parents, Darcy Shipka and Ron Shipka, they are the most incredible supporters of me and supported my career change from eventing, and they just followed my career path. Whatever I do, they're not, you know, disappointed in, or it's all a learning experience. So definitely, most importantly, I'd have to thank them. And then secondly, I would have to thank my coaches, Oded Chimoni, who was there coaching me at the weekends of Young Riders, and Robert Dover, who unfortunately couldn't be there, but was supporting, you know, through text. Both of them have coached me throughout the season and really have developed me into the rider who I am today. And I'm just so thankful that I get to continue to keep working with them. And definitely, I'd love to thank the venue and everyone who helped contribute to it, because it was an incredible experience, I think, for everyone.
And now what? What's next for you? Whilst you're down there in Florida in the heat of the summer, you said you're staying right through the end of the year, but what plans do you have with this horse and the other young horses that you're bringing along?
For Zigal or Ziggy, I hope that we'll be able to compete in the under 25 division this winter. We've already started working on it, and he's done incredible so far. And then I just imported 3 3-year-olds that are absolutely fabulous. So I'm just so excited to start to work with them, and hopefully they'll show this winter. And then as they develop, you know, we'll see if I want to keep a few or sell a few. So we'll see how that all goes. But that's sort of where I'm headed and where my business is headed.
Well, again, congratulations on being this year's winner of the Fiona Barn Pursuit of Excellence Memorial Trophy Chase. And thank you very much for coming on the program and sharing your experience with us. And the very best of luck with your career.
Oh, thank you so much. It was an incredible experience. And also this interview was very special. So thank you.
And you could find more information about the North America Junior and Young Rider Championships and the U.S. Dressage Federation's youth programs by following the link in the show notes accompanying this episode. And I'm joined now in our education segment by instructor, trainer, examiner and FEI four-star judge Sarah Geike, who is here to help us understand what makes a good walk and how to improve a less than perfect walk. Sarah, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here as always.
So the walk. Now, what makes a good walk and what makes it a bad walk and how it can be improved? Now, this is something we know that often we don't pay as much attention as we should. We're so focused on the trot and the canter and everything else in between, aren't we?
That is so true. And my experience is in judging as well as in teaching and training that most people will work, and then when they come back to the walk, their thought is, oh, I can take a break. And they completely stop riding, and they forget that the walk is a gait and requires attention.
And often it's that downward transition, not to interrupt you, Sarah, but it is often that, as you say, you come down that transition, and you do, in some form, relax in your body, thinking, oh, we've just come down, we're going to just walk now, instead of working through it, instead of riding into that walk.
Yeah, that's so correct. I mean, and you brought up two really, really important points, which is, as you said, that the transition from whatever gait into the walk, to really ride that forward, and to ride a quality balance and connection in the transition. And then, of course, afterwards to ride the walk quality. The walk is really the gait that has the least amount of leeway to improve because it does not have suspension. We do not speak of it as having impulsion, but rather we think of the walk as having activity and engagement. So great care has to be taken every time we walk our horses, because as that saying goes, we're either training the horse or we're untraining the horse. And this is so applicable to the walk. My first piece of advice is for people to just take that in mind and to think that the walk should have a marching, clear, four-beat rhythm. So I guess I'll answer your first question of what makes a good walk. And what makes a good walk is, number one, the purity of the rhythm. 4 clear beats that shows no lateral tendency or no impurity. Things that we commonly see in judging are some tendency towards lateral, which is not good. We see a completely lateral walk, which looks like kind of a crab walk. And it has kind of 2 beats, and that's really bad. because the gait is ruined. Other things we often see, though, are a little bit of irregularity, either in the front or in the hind end, where the horse would take a shorter step with one front leg, often due to the lack of straightness, the lack of even development, left side versus right side. And then also tied into that, we oftentimes can see that the horse will take what we call a little long, short steps in the hind legs, like one hind leg will take a bigger step and the other hind leg will take a slightly smaller step. And even though the walk maintains the clear four-beat rhythm, it's not a quality walk because, again, though, that also indicates a lack of straightness and balance and even development in the horse. The good walk, then, has a clear rhythm. The other quality that we want to see is, really, in a nutshell, that the horse looks like his whole body walk, that they have that, what I call that Marilyn Monroe quality, that everything moves. So when you're looking at a horse with a good walk, you see that he covers a lot of ground. He has a big step with his hind leg and a big overstride. He has freedom in his shoulders, meaning that his front legs also cover ground. And you get the impression that in his back and in his top line, everything moves, and that you can literally see a swinging action in the horse's back behind the saddle when a horse is what we call through his back. And the other aspect is because we know that the mechanics of the walk is such that the horse uses his neck in somewhat of an undulating manner where it'll stretch a little forward and back and forward and back, depending upon the degree of motion within the horse. So we look for that too. And I guess the last thing I would say in this good walk quality is that we look that not only the overstride, the purity of the rhythm, the whole body movement, but we look to see that we have like a general picture that the horse is stretching round over his top line, that is a little bit round into the bit. Even on long reins and loose reins, we would like to see that the horse has a very light connection to the rider's seat, and the rider has a connection to the horse, so that the horse is supple and relaxed in his back, and in a round way, reaching out to the bit. So that's I know that sounds like the perfect horse. I know. Anyway, that's our goal. That's what we hope to see.
That's what we're aiming for. That's what the picture should look like and how it should be achieved. And there are ways that we can, of course, spoil that. Do you want to unpick that a little bit for us, Sarah? So we draw attention to those faults, those sort of habits that creep in when we're riding, and we become maybe a little bit complacent because it's a downward transition.
Yeah, boy, I think that's a great word for it, too. And so many people there, they're so overjoyed when they get to the walk because it's usually after they've worked very, very hard at an exercise or two or three in trot and canter. So when you ride the walk, even if it's resting, I would encourage people to really just pay attention to how is the horse walking? Is it a four-beat marching gait? He doesn't, even on a break, the horse doesn't have to walk with a huge amount of activity, but it needs to be a purposeful, forward-feeling walk, forward-thinking walk on both the rider's part and the horse's part. As a result of people becoming complacent, like you said, I've noticed that they get to the walk and then they just completely stop influencing the horse at all. And they forget about the clear rhythm. They forget about the horse marching forward. They forget about their own body staying connected and their own body following mechanics. And just beginning to pay attention to that and asking the horse to march a little bit, that in itself can improve the horse's walk tremendously. Just by that, just paying attention to that. I always encourage my riders that they'd love to have the feeling that after a walk break, that due to the fact that they've had that light connection with their seat to the horse and the horse's back to the rider's seat, they should be able to make a very seamless, easy transition from the free walk, for example, back to the medium walk, as compared to going back to square one and putting the horse on the aids and going through all of that. It should be easy and seamless.
There's also that moment or few moments, actually, Sarah, I'd like you to just explain a little bit for our listeners how they can better improve the transition. When you're down to a walk, you're going to give your horse a walk break. But when you are coming down from that trot or that canter, whatever it may be, how much should you do in the walk before you say, okay, now I'm just going to drop the reins and give you a break? So actually ride that walk before you relax.
Yeah, great point. So as you said, let's imagine we've ridden a transition. I'll just say trot to walk. All right, we're going from the working trot to the medium walk. In a perfect world, what the rider should be asking the horse to do is stay forward and in balance and connected through the transition so that those first few walk steps have energy and march, and the horse is willing and compliant to stay with the rider and on the rider's aids and on the bit. What often happens if the rider is using the walk just as a break and not training it is the minute they do the transition, the horse roots the reins out of the rider's hands and stiffens and hollows his back and does the old camel walk impersonation. So the best thing the rider can do is ride the downward transition and then stay in the medium walk. Make the point to the horse that you would like the horse to please stay in a supple way on your aids and on the bit, and wait for the rider to make the decision on the rider's terms to stretch forward downward. In the beginning, if the horse has been rather rude about doing that transition and then going to the camel walk right away, it might take a little bit of insistence on the rider's part, but the perseverance will really pay off because he'll have not only a horse that he can improve the walk, but it carries through to the overall submission in the horse also.
And that might be a good habit to get into riding any horse at any time, because they may come to you with already that habit of anticipating, oh, we're going to walk now. I can just, you know, do my camel walk. I'm going to have a break. You need obviously to stop that sort of way of thinking and that anticipation from a horse, but it also might be a good discipline for the rider on a horse of any level, don't you think, Sarah, to actually discipline themselves from that downward transition that you just talked about to a medium walk, and then they can relax into that walk break.
Yes, and that's how I school them with my own horses as well as my students. But that's very, very good advice. I can relate just a comment that Robert Dover made last winter in some of the training sessions about what is collection. Collection is the possibility that you could do anything within the next stride or two. Medium walk to extended trot, you know, collected walk to passage, that it would be easy, that it would be available. So if you carry that sort of thought process into the walk, we can think that in a quality walk where the horse, and even if it's a free walk, where the horse is still supple and listening and waiting for the rider should have the feeling in that walk that anywhere, at any letter, he could, boom, put the horse back on the aids and in medium walk in a couple strides, and it would be easy. So if the rider has that feeling and idea in the back of his mind that he needs to be able to do that, like within three strides coming up ahead, it changes how you ride, and it changes how you think. So, I mean, I just loved it when I heard Robert say that. I mean, that was brilliant. But it can apply to all of us at any level of riding. Particularly, it's applicable to the walk here.
Absolutely. And it keeps the horse on the clock, on the job.
Yes. He's on the payroll till the end of the ride. And I say that to my riders. I'm glad you said that, because, riders in clinics, like, they get to the walk, and then you can see, oh, the horse is on coffee break. I'm like, no, I should not be on a coffee break. He is on payroll and on the clock until the end of the ride, till you get off. And so you have to look at it that way. Very much so.
Good advice, Sarah. Anything else you would like to add?
Just a couple other tips that riders could do, particularly if horses are not very supple in the walk and they're used to walking with stiff backs and stiff necks. Number one, they can practice off the horse in the halt, teaching the horse to accept the flexion left and accept the flexion right, which simply means that the horse learns to yield to the rein aid with the soft pull and jaw. That's all that means. They can teach the horse that in the halt, and then they can begin to teach the horse that in the walk, and even in free walk, so that when they're riding the free walk, they can work to develop the free walk long, you know, stretching forward, downward, but with a soft round pole and jaw. Other advice I would give is when you're out on the trails or when you're hacking, that's the best place to work on the walk. When you're on the trails, you know, ride the horse on a light contact on the bit, active, bend around the corners, leg yield a little this way, a little that way. The horse already has free impulsion, so to speak, because they love it out there. So you can use that activity to your benefit. And then the other thing you can do either in the arena or on the trails is make a lots and lots of little transitions, free walk, medium, over and over, particularly if your horse is resistant in that transition. Just get so that he understands it and it becomes easy and more fluid and more supple. That in itself can improve the horse drastically.
Excellent advice as always, Sarah. And of course, your article will be in the judges box in the September issue of the USDF Connection magazine. Sarah, thank you very much again for coming on the program. It was good to catch up with you.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Always a pleasure to speak with you. Love your program. Thank you so much.
And finally, a couple of reminders that registration is now live for the 2017 Adequan USDF Annual Convention in Lexington, Kentucky. An opportunity there to network with your peers, learn from some of the country's most respected experts, and keep up with the latest developments through forums and roundtable discussions. You can cap off your week by celebrating at the Salute Gala and annual awards banquet too. That's all at the 2017 Adequan USDF Annual Convention, which this year will be held in Lexington, Kentucky. And information there on registration is on the website at usdf.org. Group members can apply for the Ruth Arvanat Memorial Fund grant, which allows one deserving individual to attend the Adequan USDF Annual Convention by providing funds to cover the cost of attendance. And applications are due in the USDF office for this grant by August the 31st of 2017. And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget you can subscribe to this podcast. It's entirely free and available on iTunes and any podcast app to download to your mobile device. And the best way to find out when the next episode is available is to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And you can also listen to the show directly on the website. At the top of the front page, you'll find a link to the podcast. And whilst you're on the website, be sure to check eTrack for the latest educational information and resources. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.